Welcome back to Human to Human. Today I'm here with Felicia, and we actually did musical theater together years ago, but we're both from Toronto, but every time I've come to Montreal in the past couple years, I've come and visited you, and so I'm so excited to have you on today to talk about your life, your transition moving to Montreal, and your nonprofit organization, Sex and Self, as well as your podcast, Ladies, Let's Talk About Sex. So do you want to just let us know who you are, what you're doing, what you're currently studying?
Yeah, for sure. So my name's Felicia. I am a fourth year B.Ed. student at McGill University. And kind of in my spare time, I created a nonprofit organization called Sex and Self. And there, our mission is to basically provide femme-identifying individuals with comprehensive sex education seminars and workshops. And we have different social media initiatives that we run. So that's kind of a little bit about me.
I want to really dive into Sex and Self and how you created it and what sparked that. I love the story that you told me. I think it was like a year ago. How long have you had the organization for or created it?
Yeah, so we just turned one, I think, in May of 2020. So it's just over a year now. The story is a very long and interesting kind of series of events that happened in my life that kind of led me to really advocating for comprehensive sex education, especially for women in general or femme identifying folks. So I guess to like give people a general understanding of like where I was in my life when this whole thing kind of came to be, or maybe even backtracking that, I went to and was raised in a very Catholic Italian home. So my sex education was very limited growing up. And while I didn't have a sex negative experience, I definitely didn't have a sex positive one either. So I was very sheltered sexually. And even in my own personal interest, I had sex on the later end of the spectrum, if we're going to even, you know, qualify it as that. I think I was 18 or 19 when I had sex for the first time. So that's like, it's not that late, but it was also not, I was not sexually liberated at a young age. I thought that I was going to be very conservative. I really thought for a long time that I was going to wait until marriage. I thought that was something. Yeah.
Look at you now talking about sex all the time.
No, it's literally every day of my life now. But yeah, I grew up, like, I went to Catholic school my whole life, so sex education there was just, like, abstinence was the only option, and in the way that they teach sex ed, at least at my high school, it was very much, like, fear-focused, so in my mind, and due to, like, a lot of different factors, I thought that the best way to protect myself was basically to not have sex, which is very damaging in itself, but at the time, I didn't really know, so as I was progressing kind of in my own life, and I moved away to university, and I was trying to figure out like who I was outside of my family unit and who I wanted to be, I obviously started dating guys and, you know, doing whatever I was doing. And I really didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Can I curse on the podcast?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, no, I really had no idea what to do, how to protect myself. And even just from like an emotional standpoint, like the type of turbulent relationships that I had, even sometimes with like just platonic male friends, was like, now that I think about it, I'm like, God, someone help her. Like, she needed so much help. Because I had never focused on like really creating either platonic or non-platonic relationships with men. I'm also very straight, so this was kind of my target demographic. and so I was really sheltered. And so when I started experimenting or even just like mildly dating, because we're in this, you know, my generation is very much in the like, we're gonna sleep together for 2 months, but we're not gonna call it anything. And I don't really know what to classify any of these relationships as. So like, I'm gonna call them relationships because they were individuals in my life that served a purpose. But I wouldn't call them like my boyfriends or anything. But basically, I was kind of going through the motions. And I think that my virginity story, which I've never talked about publicly before, is something that would really give you insight as to how Sex and Self kind of catapulted itself. Mm-hmm. Essentially, like, long story short, I thought I was going to save myself for marriage, didn't make it a priority to speak with the person that I actually lost my virginity to. I didn't like really advocate for what I believed was like what I wanted out of that sexual experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that a lot of women struggle with. We kind of have this notion of like, I'm going to have sex with whoever I'm going to have sex with. And I want them to like me, and I want them to think I'm this, and I want them to think I'm that. And I also have to be mysterious and sexual and blah, 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 blah. So I'm just going to be like the cool girl. I don't know if you've seen Gone Girl, but there's the cool girl scene where she talks about like, I'm the girl who drinks beers and eats pizza, and I like stay a size 2, like just for you. Like, that's who I thought I wanted to be at the time. And so I really didn't express any of my concerns or like ideals in regards to like my virginity. And like, virginity is a social construct, so you don't lose anything when you have sex for the first time. But for me, that's kind of how I envisioned it with like the limited education that I had. Mm-hmm. And so when I had sex with the person I had sex with, he was going, it was so long ago now. He was going away. We weren't going to be together for the summer, and I wanted to be exclusive, and he was not ready to do that. So post first sexual interaction, basically, we had a conversation after I had lost my virginity to this boy, and he basically said that he wasn't ready to commit, so we stopped seeing each other. This was all in the span of maybe an hour. So I was, like, to say the least, traumatized.
Especially having that conversation after the fact, too.
And listen, like, the guy, I can't blame him in its entirety. Like, partially, it was my responsibility to have that conversation with him before I chose to have sex with him. And I should have told him, like, virginity is a big thing for me. Like, I trust you, but I also want you to know that this is important to me. So, mm-hmm. like, if I had that conversation with him before having sex with him, we probably wouldn't have had sex. Like, yeah. I think he respected me enough at the time to, like, know that, like, we weren't on the same page. Mm-hmm. But that was the tipping point for Felicia to just be like, oh, what the fuck? So after that situation happened, honestly, like, my mental health plummeted. Like, I was so unhappy with my life. I didn't know how to pursue any type of like substantial relationship. I didn't know how I wanted to be as like a sexual woman. I had like no idea what the fuck was going on. And so after that, essentially, like, between like that relationship ending and then me meeting the second, I would say, like, substantial individual in my life, or just like substantial sexual being in my life, I met this guy on Tinder. And now looking back, I was definitely like seeking some sort of validation or affirmation from this boy that I was having sex with, because I was not happy with the way my virginity kind of fell through, essentially. These are not the healthy ways of handling anything. Now, like, and I think also, like, we have to be a little bit gentle with our past self too. Because, like, obviously, knowing what I know now, I would have never done what I did. But I think we'll get back to the whole full circle situation at the end of this story.
For sure.
So let's call him candidate number 2. He showed up and was so charming. Like, so charming. We got along super well. But I did meet him like on Tinder. So I thought, okay, now you're going to have agency over your sexuality. Like, go get him tested for STDs. Cause I was like, I don't know who this man is. I don't like really know much about like safe sex either. So I was like, okay, let's just get him tested for STDs. So I make this man go to the McGill Clinic with me and we get tested together. It's a beautiful date. Wonderful. Wow. And so basically, like, as the relationship kind of progressed, it was essentially a glamorized booty call. There was a little bit of like emotional manipulation so that I felt super comfortable in the sense that, like, we did go on a bunch of dates, but then I think back to the end of the relationship and we would really only see each other like after 5 p.m. But it was so consistent that I was like, this is fine because it's convenient for me. But like now, after, you know, 2020 is hindsight, I really realized that, like, while it served a purpose, it wasn't an emotional relationship. This person didn't have the capability to give me like anything that I needed emotionally. He was just a body and he could have been filled with anyone else. But because of the place, like because of where I was at in my life, and I was super, super unhappy, super, super unaware of like how all of these relationships were affecting me and my mental health, I would just kind of let this guy do whatever he wanted because I was seeking something else from him. And honestly, I couldn't tell you exactly what that was, but it was some sort of like validation or even just like the feeling of being close to someone, even if you're not actually close with that person. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that like makes sense.
It makes sense. I've had a similar experience too, where I'm like, we're not even that, we don't emotionally connect on a level that I, you know I could with someone else, but being physically close and physically intimate with someone is a different game. And like, I think we really like want that so much that even if the emotional isn't there, sometimes we're like, okay, that's okay, because I want that physical intimacy.
Yeah. And like the sex was great. So like, even though he was a fucking awful person, and I don't want to like, to just like tear him down, because like, I also think that this was one of the situations where like, it was like 60-40, his fault, my fault. And we'll get into that in a second. But like, if I ever saw this man now, we have zero in common, like absolutely nothing in common. So at the time I was so naive. I was so vulnerable. I was so unaware of like what an actual healthy relationship looked like or is or should be. And so basically we were intimate for like a period of 2 months, something like that. And we weren't using protection because I was under the impression that if you take someone to the health clinic, you are exclusive. Now, we never had that conversation, which is like a lesson that Felicia didn't learn from candidate number one, and she carried it to candidate number two. I felt like the relationship was like falling apart a little bit, and like I didn't know it at the time, but I was doing things to try and make it like make him want me more or make him like me. I don't even know what the fuck I was doing, because honestly, it's so sad to think about now. But it was the final week I like had ever spent with him. It was like his birthday, so I made him cupcakes for his birthday. And then it was like my roommate's birthday like the next couple days, so he came to her birthday party with me. And then, oh, it was St. Patrick's Day. And we were at the same bar, so we went home together, and I was in his bed, and I, like, fluffed the sheets, and it's the movie scene. You hear that little tick, 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 and you're like, what is that? And it was some other girl's earring. So I was like, oh, this is really fucking mean. So we had, like, a conversation. He really, like, was not emotionally invested at all. Like I could just tell he didn't care. So anyways, I left. 2 months later, I start noticing that there's like a lot of irregular discharge. Sorry, this is TMI disclosure. We're going to start talking about my vagina. So, you know, if you want to tune in or out, you can do whatever you want, but here we are. And so I realized that there was like a some type of pH imbalance. At the time, I didn't know what the fuck it was. I thought I was dying. I thought I had chlamydia, gonorrhea, all the STDs, like crazy. I was so like unaware of what was going on. I was so unaware of like all of the like terrible things that I basically let happen to my body, partially because I didn't have any sex ed. And so essentially, long story short, I go to a gynecologist, but I went to a private clinic because I really thought I was fucking dying. And I spent, I swear to God, I spent like maybe $500. And gynecologists are so expensive. And it's okay. Insurance covered like most of it, but still it was not like the anxiety and the money. I was just so pissed by the end of the whole situation. But by the end of it, I realized that, or I got essentially like diagnosed, but it's really not a diagnosis, of bacterial vaginosis, which is basically a vaginal condition that changes the pH in your vagina. And there's a lot of causes to this, and you don't have to be sexually active to get BV, but being sexually active does make you more like predisposition to some of the side effects like sperm and like having multiple sexual partners. And so within this 2 month time frame, my body wasn't showing any symptoms. One, because on top of BV, I had a yeast infection, which was extra beautiful.
Oh God.
But two, there is like kind of like a window period where you can have no symptoms at all. And then they can show up months later just because of like the way our body reacts when there's like a pH imbalance or like whatever it may be, whether it's an STD, even though most STDs or STIs don't have a lot of symptoms. So essentially I had this positive diagnosis. I had to take antibiotics for 10 days. It was really not a big deal, like super fine. But I did get it because I was sleeping with that guy and he was sleeping with other people. So he was changing the pH imbalance in my vagina. So that was a really wonderful experience for me. I was not only the most vulnerable and emotional in my life, but it was like this sense of like violation, not only emotionally, but like physically. And so it was one of those things where once I got my diagnosis and once I understood kind of what was going on, and plus the OBGYN that I had was awful. She was so like, she did not put me at any ease when I was speaking with her. She wasn't very articulate. She was very like not open to having a conversation. I, at this point in my life, had had no sex education, no understanding of what was going on. And I didn't really realize how important condoms were until that. Because if I used a condom with this guy, I would have never had BV. Like, it would have never happened. Because that transfer of bacteria wouldn't have been able to happen because he was wearing a condom. But we like used condoms for like a week, and then I just gave him, you know, the VIP access because I liked him so much, or whatever that may be. So it was a very, very like, the second year of university for me was like the hardest year I think I've lived in my life. Because I was so emotionally vulnerable with all of these different people. And then I was also going through like my own personal issues with my family and also figuring out how you want to live on your own as your own adult. And then on top of that, like my body was basically like psyching me out because I didn't know what was going on and I didn't know how to protect myself. So basically, a couple weeks after that positive diagnosis, I got this email from McGill, and it was an opportunity for students to get funding for like an initiative that they wanted to present to the student body. And I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I like submitted some type of thing about like sex ed, like let's do a sex ed seminar. Let's talk about this. Cause at this point in my life, me and my friends were all still trying to figure out like our own sexualities, how we can be safe, how we can be liberated, and also just like learning more about our own bodies and like what they're capable of, but also like how we can protect them. And so I kind of submitted this like funny little proposal. I was like, let's do seminars and workshops and like get doctors to come in and tell us like what's good. And so I submitted it in May, and I like didn't hear anything until July. And then Yeah. And then I got like an email. I was at work or something. And basically they were like, we're going to grant you the funds for, at the time, Sex and Self was called Ladies Let's Talk About Sex. And I was like, holy shit. Now I actually have to do this.
You were like, wait, oh, I submitted that. I totally
Honestly.
Yeah.
I didn't think that it was anything that anybody cared about. I didn't think that it was anything anybody needed. I thought everyone at university was like sexually liberated and everybody has been fucking since they were 16. And I was the last one to, you know, get on the train. Like, I was very like not aware about anything sex ed. So like I went in totally blind, like no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the funds. So I pulled together a team of like 12 individuals who were interested in like advocating and, you know, helping me basically plan a seminar. And so in January of 2020, we held the first seminar, which was actually called Sex and Self.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an OBGYN and a sex therapists come in and kind of give like femme-identifying individuals a rundown on basically like all things sex. So from anatomy to masturbation to birth control to abortions and like everything in between. And at that event, we had, I would say, under 150 people. And so that was like the first time where I was like, this is definitely needed. Like, this mm-hmm. is super necessary. And then also having this group of like, you know, it was a small bunch, but it was still 12 different experiences, and hearing about everybody's experience with sex education within their own sexuality, especially like those who are part of the LGBTQIA plus community, how they're marginalized even more than just like a cisgendered heterosexual woman like me. Mm-hmm. So it was super, super, like, enlightening, and, like, just, like, very interesting, because as I was learning, and it was kind of nice that I got to learn alongside, like, experts and different people in the field and other individuals who wanted to learn more about sex ed, I was learning about all of the discrepancies within, like, our education system, within the healthcare system, and then all of the intersectionalities that affect these different things, like race, poverty, sexuality, like gender expression. There are so many things that inhibit people from getting comprehensive sex ed. And then you get put into situations like me, where you're super naive, you're super vulnerable, you're also going through, you know, other things in your life. The least you could have behind you is comprehensive sex ed. But mm-hmm. like, so many individuals lack that. So that's kind of the whole like kumbaya full circle situation that I had to experience. But honestly, like if I had to live it again, I 100% would. Like even though it was so awful and so like debilitating to my soul, mm-hmm. it was like one of those experiences that like now I look back on, I'm so fond of the experiences that I had with those two people and how those experiences essentially shaped me to be who I am today, because I like myself a lot better than I did 2 years ago. So yeah. It's definitely been like a long journey,
mm-hmm.
but it's been really, really rewarding.
That's amazing. And I'm so honored that you're sharing this personal side of it for the first time here, because I feel like hearing the backstory of what you've gone through and the sexual experiences you've had and how that affected your mental health in such a negative way just brings just such a new light to what you're doing for this organization. And like, it's so cool to also think, like, I can't even imagine how much you're learning through the process of creating it and getting to speak to these professionals and organize these events.
Yeah, that's honestly been kind of the nicest thing too, because I do focus on like femme sex ed. So I get to speak to all of these different women who are super knowledgeable, super educated. I've gotten to speak to different OBGYNs. I've gotten mm-hmm. to speak to porn stars, therapists, wow. Sexologists, psychologists, like just an array of individuals who like have so much to share. And even just like being able to like do additional readings and learn more about like the science behind sex, or even just like the psychology behind dating. Mm-hmm. It's been like super, super rewarding and like informative, and it's definitely like changing the course of my life.
Yeah, that's amazing. How have you found it's affected like your romantic relationships, but also like just your friendships with other people now that you've, you know, been the president of this organization for quite some time?
Well, I definitely think that it's allowed me to be a lot more honest with the people that I care about. Mm-hmm. And there's like a different sense of vulnerability too when you're having conversations about like intimacy or being intimate with like another person. And it's also given me the opportunity to meet so many like-minded people. Like the team now is, I would say like 47 individuals. Wow. So just the opportunity to meet like 47 people who like want to advocate for the same thing as I do has mm-hmm. like totally shifted my perspective and like my understanding, and has given me so many different opportunities in my life. So like I would say that that's like so important. You know what is really funny actually, and as I'm kind of growing and evolving and like changing from the person I was 2 years ago to now, I had this fear that like guys weren't gonna like me anymore because I was like, you know, openly talking about sex ed, and I was openly, you know, having all these conversations and like posting about it and stuff like that. That is not the response at all. Like, absolutely. And it's also, it's very nice because I feel like it's another way to vet potential guys just because it's so much a part of my life. So if I go on a date with someone and they're asking me, okay, what do you like to do? Or what's your organization about? Talking to them about comprehensive sex ed really gives you insight on how much this motherfucker knows.
Yes.
Because if he says some dumbass shit, I'm gone. Like, I'm not here to teach you. I'm not here to like, of course, like if someone wants to have an open conversation, and that's actually what's kind of sparked from this. I've had so many of my guy friends from like high school and elementary school like ask me all of these different questions about gender and inclusivity, and sometimes like situations with their girlfriends too, where they're like, my girlfriend's having this issue, like what should I recommend or how should I help her? Which I think is so, so nice, because it's like we want men to stand with us when we're advocating for this. And men are also, you know, sexually repressed as well, not in the same way women are, but if we're talking about it from like a heteronormative like perspective, but yeah, it's definitely like vetted out some weirdos like really quick.
Yeah. I believe it.
And it's definitely like shown me like who has like good intentions and who's like willing to learn, because I think one thing that I didn't do with candidate one and two was I kind of just accepted like everything about them. And like humans aren't just one being for their whole life. Like you grow and evolve and you learn, and I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago. So like, why should the person I be with like have all of these views? And if they're not like, if I don't agree with them, or if I don't think that they're valid or whatever it may be, like, are we not willing to learn together? Are we not willing to like have that open conversation and like evolve as humans? So I think it's really interesting. I feel like I attract at least more interesting men.
Yeah.
Now, because I like the type of girl I was 2 years ago was very much traditional, and like, that's fine, because like, depending on who you are and who you authentically want to be, like your values obviously like depend on like your family and your views and your perspectives. But like, I don't think that I was authentically like supposed to be traditional. I think that I was just a product of my family.
Mm-hmm.
But I was attracting men that really liked women who were traditional and like very much, I would say, like submissive to a degree, and very, like kind of a little bit like reinforcing power dynamics, which is like very much not my personality at all. But it was super weird to see how I was when I liked someone, especially like a couple of years ago, where I would just kind of submit to everything because I had this urge for them to like me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why. I really don't know why, but you grow and you learn. And I think that as I'm growing too, the men that I'm attracting, obviously some of them are still frogs and like, they're still, you know, something else, but I do think that I'm attracting a more evolved and a more engaged young man.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
the type of guy I was attracting before.
And I love that, like, what you said before about, like, oh, trying to be a cool girl that, like, they easily like and all this stuff. It changes so much when you begin doing something like Sex and Self, like your Ladies Let's Talk About Sex podcast. I felt it with me doing this podcast. It changes a dynamic when you go on a date or you're talking to a guy and they ask you, what are you interested in? And then you are going to be, you have to put yourself out there and be a bit vulnerable and tell them about this thing that makes them actually think. And you're not going to just be like, oh, I just like to, like, go out on the weekends, instead of like being like, this is what I do actually in my spare time. And I think it definitely would filter out the guys who are intimidated by that or don't want to, you know, be a part of that conversation, for sure. And like that, even what you're talking about too, made me think about, like, you know, the more traditional mindset. I listened to the Red Table Talk. I listened to one of their podcast episodes recently about sex, and I had this whole like mind fuck where I was like, in our society, sex is displayed to be for men. And traditionally, it was. Women were to be submissive and do what they were asked and do what the men wanted. And it's so, I love what you're doing so much, because it's so important to challenge the norms that we're surrounded by and what we think we should be acting like or feeling like or doing. And we can't do that unless the conversation starts to be opened up and we can have that conversation together and challenge those norms together.
No, absolutely. And like, even posing the question, like, what is normal? Like, what is expected of us? Like, what does that mean? And like, who determined that? Because really, if you look at history, a bunch of white dudes determined what normal was. Yeah. And look where that got us. The planet's burning. You know, women have barely any rights. We're still repressed. Like, there's so many things going on. There's a fucking pandemic. Yeah. Like, obviously what we've been doing and what's normal hasn't been getting us where we need to be. Mm-hmm. And has also been marginalizing a lot of communities alongside that. Not even like, I always think about like, I'm a woman and I'm repressed and blah, 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 blah. And like, I'm sexually inferior and this is what society says about me. But then I think about like the queer women or the trans women or the Black women or the Indigenous women and all of the social barriers that are set in place for these individuals, and like how like an Indigenous woman is supposed to seek comprehensive sex education. Like, how is that possible? Like, where do they have access to that? How do they get that? So I really think that, you know, having these conversations are so important. I also think that we know our stories and we know our bodies better than anyone else does. So like, I think there's so much value in sharing that and discussing that. And I think there's a lot of strength in vulnerability. I feel like for hundreds and thousands of years, we've seen vulnerability as a weakness. And a lot of men have used vulnerability as kind of like a pinnacle to put women in their places or to make them feel like their emotions aren't validated. But I think that that's one of the ways that men are super, super repressed, because they're unable to be vulnerable within the society that we live in. Mm-hmm. Because they have to be super macho and manly, and obviously we're straying away from that, but it's still there. Yeah. So I think that having conversations like this are so important, and I'm so glad that you wanted to have me.
Oh my God, I'm so glad. The last thing I want to make sure we touch on this too, because I think I really took inspiration from you from this in, you know, the past couple years when we've seen each other and had coffee and chatted. You explained to me how you took a year off having sex and dating. And I just decided in August, I was like, okay, I didn't say a year. I said a month, but we're on month two now and it's going good. But like, what inspired that? And what did you take away that you learned about yourself in that time?
Yeah, I definitely think that year, and it's actually, I haven't slept with anyone since candidate number two. So it's been almost like a year and a half now. And at this point, like, it's not by choice. We're in a pandemic, though, and I'm really not prioritizing dating. I also work on top of running Sex and Self. So, like, really, my time is, like, so limited. So, like, there's a lot of barriers there. But I, when I decided that I wasn't going to, like, pursue any other sexual relationships after candidate number two, I really took the time to learn about myself and my body. I had never masturbated, like, until candidate number two. And then, like, I really only started masturbating for myself, like, months after that. So learning about my own body, learning about what my body likes, what my body doesn't like, that was a huge thing, because there was no other avenue to seek that type of gratification or pleasure. And I think it's super important to prioritize that too in your life, because women need it just as much as men do. And there's so many health benefits to masturbation. Like, if you're anxious, masturbate. If you can't sleep, masturbate. Like, it's fine. Just masturbate as often as you want. Like, who cares? It doesn't affect anyone. As long as it's not inhibiting you from, like, eating, sleeping, and breathing, then you're fine. But then I also took that year to really self-reflect. And it also wasn't a pleasant year either, because I was very much alone. And I had to, I knew that I didn't want to open myself up to anyone else until I felt like completely okay with myself and my mental health, and kind of grasped who I wanted to be in the next relationship that I had, whether that's, you know, the next boyfriend I have or the next sexual partner that I have, whatever that may be. I really wanted to know myself as an entity before I added someone to the picture. Because if we look back at scenario one and two, I was just a mold. I was molding to whatever they wanted me to be, and I never really put my needs before theirs. And so I had to really relearn that, because that was super instilled in just my being. So I think that was the biggest thing I took away. Yeah, that and masturbating.
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much. I literally was thinking the other day, I'm like, wow. I was like, the amount I have sex when I'm in a relationship is so disproportionate to the amount I masturbate when I'm not in a relationship. What the hell? It should, like, be, like, if not more, because that's for ourselves, and it's such a stress reliever. And I just love that you are sharing this, because it normalizes these conversations, and we can get through life so much easier when we can talk about all of this and know that we're connected and we feel similar things, and it's not weird or wrong at all.
No, absolutely. And if men can do it, so can we.
But yeah.
Seriously, I'm so sick and tired of men making masturbation jokes. Like, no, we're going to do it too. And it's not even about, because honestly, like, I do not want to be compared to men on, like, a sexual, like, I'm trying to think of, on, like, a sexual level, in the sense of, like, their expectations and the norms associated with it, because, like, men's cisgendered heterosexual men, their sexuality is, like, pretty toxic from, like, a general understanding. Now, there's, like, individual situations, but I never want to be compared to that, because look what's that, like, look where that's gotten us. Like, straight guys are more likely to, you know, be predators, be violent with women. There's just so many statistics against that demographic because of the social norms associated with it. So it's not about being exactly like men or taking over the idea of, like, what a sexual man looks like and being equal to that. It's more about creating sexuality and defining it for, like, what you want. And I think that, and something I like to, like, encourage in my organization, it's really funny too, because in the time that I've had this organization, I haven't had sex. And so, yeah, a little TMI, but it's true. And
yeah,
I think sex positivity encompasses everyone that wants to have sex or doesn't. And it's just about having a positive conversation around whatever sexual decision you're making, whether you want to wait until you're married or whether you want to have sex twice a day with two different people. Like, it's totally up to you. It's totally up to your discretion. It's totally up to your own safety. And whatever decision you make, man, woman, or anyone in between, I'll support it as long as you're being safe and you're respecting your partners. That's kind of the thing that I want to take away from, you know, having sex and self and having an organization like this. It's not about, and this was something I kind of had a little bit of a notion of, like, in regards to sex positivity from like an ignorant perspective, you think that sex positivity means having a lot of sex. And that's not at all what it means. It just means having a positive light and a positive understanding of sex and sexuality when you're having these conversations.
Wow, that's such a good point. I feel like I'm so glad I had you on, and you are just, everything you're doing is so important, and I just admire it, and I'm so excited to keep up with it. And on the topic of masturbation, you have so many giveaways on your Instagram. So if you want to link any of your Instagrams, they'll all be in the show notes, but which are all the accounts that people should be following?
Yeah. So we have our main page, which is @sexandself_. There we have most of our giveaways, information about our university program, and any events that are going to be upcoming. They'll be there. We also have a high school outreach program called Bodies A to Z, where we teach local Montreal students comprehensive sex ed courses. There you can find us @bodiesa2z. And then if you want to listen to the Ladies Let's Talk About Sex podcast, it's @ladiesletstalkaboutsex on Instagram as well.
Perfect. Oh, thank you for being here. This was so fun.
Oh, I'm so happy. Thanks for having me, Jess.
Of course. Okay. Thank you everybody for listening as well. Feel free to follow me on Instagram @JessicaJMcDonald, and I post every Tuesday and Fridays.